mistakes. And as I was there, I had a number of experiences that that I thought I would share with you, and I'm going to apologize in advance. I don't think there's going to be any Torah content in this sikha. Maybe a little bit, but very, very minimal. But I think there's something I when I was there, let's get right to it. When I was there, I landed in America some 2+ weeks ago. Literally, I got to my place of where I was staying literally halftime of the Super Bowl. That's when I got to my lodging. And for a day or two or three, you know, giant fever was very much in the air in the New York area, and parades and this and that and the other thing. And then a little while afterwards, the media, especially the sports media, is always looking for something to connect to latch on to. So kind of once the Super Bowl was like in the rearview mirror, they had to kind of latch on to something else. It just so happened that I don't remember exactly what day it was, but sometime that week, shortly after the Super Bowl, was the day that this unknown 12th, 13th man on the team is put into a game. And the Knicks at the time had lost 9 out of 10 games. And he comes off the bench and he sparks the team and he scores some 20-odd points during that game. And then they start him the next game. And then he plays the Lakers and it's 38 points. And all of a sudden, everyone is paying a lot of attention to the Knicks, Bichlal, and Jeremy Lin Bifrat. And I spent a lot of time in the car. And in the car, well, at least when I'm in the New York area, I tend to, every so often, listen to sports radio, and all they're talking about is Jeremy Lin and Lin's sanity, and this, that's all they're talking about. And then I even turn on to other radio stations, a little regular talk radio, and it doesn't matter what, I'm in a lot of cities. I'm in Pittsburgh, and I'm in Chicago, and I'm in Boston, and it doesn't matter where I'm at. I even took a quick trip over to the Far East, China, and they're talking nonstop. They're talking about Jeremy Lin. And everywhere, it has taken over everything. The talk radio that's not sports is talking about Jeremy Lin. The lead story on the news, Jeremy Lin. It's all that the world is talking about. It's taken over. And I started thinking, like, what exactly is this all about? Like, why is this such an attractive story to so many people? Why do people attach and somehow find like this is really, really meaningful? And I had my theories, and I developed my theories, and I did spend some time thinking about it. And then this article came out, which many of you, or some of you have read. It's a New York Times op-ed piece, which Harav Berg Shlita sent to me. It's written by a guy named David Brooks, and when I read his article and his take on the story, I frankly thought that he was absolutely off the mark. I think he makes a point, and I think there's a point which I want to use to really present to you an idea. And he tells us that Jeremy Lin is an anomaly in all sorts of ways. He's a Harvard grad in the NBA. Like, that's as far a stealer as you can find. A Harvard grad in the NBA that just doesn't go. He's an Asian American in professional sports. You don't find too many Asian Americans playing U.S. professional sports. And then he says we shouldn't neglect the biggest anomaly. He says the biggest anomaly, he's a religious person in professional sports. And when it comes to sports, religious people don't play sports. He happens to be, I don't know what his religion is, but on the heels of Tim Tebow, now all of a sudden, religion and sports have become this big thing that people start talking about that somehow mesh. And comes along David Brooks, and he says, there's something fundamentally problematic. It's a stira mineu bei to be a religious person with the morality of religion versus the morality of sports. It's a clash, it's a contradiction, and the two cannot coexist because they're at odds with each other. And then he goes ahead and he presents the morality of the athletes, and then he presents the morality of religion, again, which religion will kind of generalize it, says, what's the morality of the athlete? Guys, anyone who's on a device, please put it away. The morality of modern sport, the moral universe of modern sport, is oriented around victory and supremacy. The sport hero tries to perform great deeds in order to win glory and fame. It doesn't really matter whether he has good intentions. His job is to beat his opponents and avoid the oblivion that goes with defeat. The modern sports hero is competitive and ambitious. He's theatrical. He puts himself on display. He is assertive, proud, and intimidating. He makes himself the center of attention when the game is on the line. His identity is built around his prowess. His achievement is measured by how much he can elicit the admiration of other people, the roar of the crowd, and the respect of ESPN. That's the ethos, the morality of, if you will, the modern day athlete. And that's one model. And he says that's fundamentally opposed to what he calls the religious ethos. What is the religious ethos? So he says, when it comes to the religious ethos, what's the value? The value is humility is the primary virtue. You achieve loftiness of spirit by performing the most menial services. And that's why, he says, in the Bible, all of the great personalities of our Torah were all shepherds. Because the menial kind of activity and the menial shepherd becomes the Navi. He becomes the Melech. It's about humility. It's about self-effacement. You achieve strength by acknowledging your weaknesses, and you lead most boldly when you consider yourself an instrument of a larger cause. There's a clash. Humility versus me. And the two cannot coexist. So Jeremy Lin, Tim Tebow, these types of personalities are personalities that somehow something's got to give. Because if you're going to be that world-class athlete where you are at the center of the universe, and you're going to be that religious persona where you're not at the center of the universe, it's a stira and it's impossible. And who, of course, does he cite as the proponent of this irreconcilable clash? None other than Rav Soloveitchik. And he quotes from The Lonely Man of Faith, and he quotes from his essay, Majesty and Humility, and he says, our best teacher on these matters, he doesn't say rabbi, but Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik, the great Jewish theologian, in his essays, he argues that people have two natures. There's Adam 1, that's the part that creates, discovers, competes, and is involved in building the world. Then there's Adam 2, the spiritual individual who is awed and humbled by the universe as a spectator and as a worshiper. And there's Adam 1, Adam 2. Adam 1 is achieving great heights. He's walking on the moon. He's building great skyscrapers. He's curing cancer. And Adam, too, lives in Gan Eden and is purely this humble man of God. And as he says, that is the existential, irreconcilable clash that man has within himself. And man lives in tension. He lives in this tension. And he says, Jeremy Lin is now this living creature of contradiction. Religious, athletes, and the two don't go together. Nice mahalach, interesting mahalach, and he obviously, you know, he's building his mahalach on the coattails of the Lin phenomena. I see the Lin phenomena, however, and he wants to make his drasha, his shtickle tov. I see the Lin phenomena, however, as something much more basic. It's not a stira, and I think the reason, I'd like to just share with you, the reason I think the world has latched itself on to this young man is not just because he went to Harvard, that's a piece of it. It's not just because Asian American, that's a piece of it. And it's not only because he took a lousy basketball team of dysfunctional athletes and with a cast of essentially no-name players started to put them on a winning track. So I think all of that together with what I'll suggest is the glue, what makes it attractive and what gives it such a good feel, which everyone kind of wants to find out what's this all about, I believe, is because at the end of the day, that what I'll call the ethos of the athlete that he describes, that David Brooks sets up for us, is exactly what Jeremy Lin is not. He is not that person who's looking to make it all about me, who's looking for his glory, for his godless, for his prowess. What makes him special, and what makes the story special, yes, he might be scoring 25 points a game, but it's not about his scoring that amount. It is about his taking this cast of no-name characters, and instead of a team of dysfunctional, individual, selfish players playing for themselves, he's bonded them together to play as a team. And he's created a unit no one ever heard. Maybe a real sports fan have, but the average casual sports fan never heard of a guy named Novak. And all of a sudden, this guy Novak is a special player. He's not a special player, but he's now part of a special thing, which is people playing together, a person who doesn't care about his points. He cares as much about his assists, about distributing the ball, about getting people involved, and thereby creating a winner. And in my mind, that's the specialness of this story, is that it became, instead of about some high-paid players making a lot of money who are household names, taking people who are not household names, who are very, very ordinary, middle of the rotation, perhaps bench players, and now becoming a team, now contributing in their own way for a greater whole. And there was a lot of shtickel Torahs, a lot of Torah. But what's going to happen when Amari comes back? And what's going to happen when Carmelo comes back? Because these are the names, and these are the Gavras, and they need the ball. And all of a sudden, like, is it going to continue being a team, or is it now going to shift back into the dysfunctional individuals? And again, the specialness in my mind of this story is the notion of people coming together, and now all of a sudden, very ordinary type of people, the unit becomes so much greater than the sum of those individual parts, because now they're acting as a team. And you find this again looking at sports analogies, and you look at any sense of real sports history, and you'll see that great individual players, and the reason that, for example, just to stay on this theme, LeBron James was so hated by so many people when he left Cleveland is because people saw him as caring about himself. That moral ethos that is discussed over here by Mr. Brooks, perhaps the paradigm of that was an individual who was looking out for the individual who'd been in a certain city, who grew up in a city, who played in a city, was the face, but basically decided to operate for himself. And that's what got people's ire up. And what people get excited about is when people start banding together, and then all of a sudden, again, the ordinary can become very, very special. That, to me, is what this story is all about. It's not about Jeremy Lin, but it's what he did to the people around him. By being a community man, a team man, all of a sudden, and humble, and you listen to him speak, there's humbleness, there's... He's kind of like, you know, this is all like, I'm just a regular guy. He's, you know, playing ball. I was talking to a Rebbe of this yeshiva a little while ago, recently. And just to bring a little bit home, to translate this into some lemaisa. And we're talking about the yeshiva and how things are going. This man is telling me, sometimes guys miss minyan in this yeshiva. I don't know if you've noticed. And sometimes guys miss siddurim in this yeshiva. I don't know if you've noticed. And these things happen for a lot of good and bad reasons. Laziness, I'm not feeling well, when this happened, well, I'm not into it. There's a lot of different factors. And sometimes, when things hit a certain threshold of like missing a fair amount, a lot, whatever, so then person might get a talking to by a rabbi, Sapper, and he might be put on early curfew. Something might happen. There might be some kind of consequence. And the natural reaction of a person, which is understandable, is, I need to do this on my own. It's like forcing me, punishing this, that. It's not, it needs to come from me. And if it's coming from the outside, if it's coming because of external pressure, is it real? Is that the right way to do it? Is there a better way? And then there's also this concept, so there's these like very natural arguments. And frankly, they're 100% legitimate. They're perfectly good arguments. Absolutely. But I think they miss the point. And I'll tell you why. Because the point is that it's not about the individual. For the individual, for the yachid, it is 100% the case. Could very well be that for this particular yachid, he needs for it to come in a certain way, at a certain time, at a certain juncture. And for the yachid, it might sometimes be better in a different way. In this way, in that way, this might not be always the best thing for the yachid. What's important for every yachid to understand and really appreciate, and I think at this point, maybe we're starting to, get the concept, is you are, not just here, everywhere, you are part of something so much bigger than you as a yachid. You're part of something beyond you. And the more we get tapped into that concept, that you're part of something bigger than yourself, then all of a sudden, it might not be so great for me. It might not be ideal and perfect for me. But sometimes it's what the team needs. And when you're part of a family and you're part of a team and you're part of a cloud, a season, then even if sometimes for the prot there's a challenge, it might not be 100% perfect or not something that makes me happy, but the yeshiva, the cloud, the family is a better place because of it. And as a result, it could be the right thing on the cloud level. Now let me explain what I mean. Imagine a yeshiva where a third of the guys go to minyan. And imagine a yeshiva where 3/4 of the guys, or 90% of the guys, or even 100% of the guys go to minyan. Minyan is fundamentally different when there's a ton of empty seats in the room and when all the seats are filled up. Right now, most of the seats are filled up in this room. And I'll be very honest and very straight with you. If there were half the people in this room right now than there are right now, I would be feeling bad. I would perhaps be impacted, and perhaps my delivery would be impacted. This morning we had a very nice challah in davening, and a challah with everyone involved is a profoundly different challah than if you had half the people involved. It's a different experience. Shear. It's a better shear, a more interactive shear. The Rebbe is more energetic. He brings more to the table when the team is involved. And when it's a bunch of yechidim and everyone is working as a yachid, what's right for me, what's best for me, what's going to go ahead and help me, what's in my interests. So again, it might produce 30-point scores. And it might produce all-star players, but very rarely is it going to produce a winning team. And at the end of the day, the more we can inculcate into ourselves, not just here, but as a worldview, as a vision of life, that we are part of something bigger than ourselves, that goes beyond ourselves. We're part of a club. And we need to navigate and very often subjugate. Because everyone understands that just using our muscle, if the Knicks are to continue winning, Carmelo's not going to score 25, 28 points a game. It's not going to be the right formula. He's got to go ahead and subjugate himself. And maybe get some less glory. And maybe not be an all-star. And maybe only score 18 points a game. And maybe with 15 seconds left, someone else will take the ball once in a while. And the team is going to be so much better. And is going to win. And is going to so much farther because of that phenomenon. And that is a very mature approach, very unselfish, but ultimately that will get Carmelo much farther and will get obviously the team much farther. The individuals will go farther once they appreciate that concept. The whole is always going to be much bigger and better than the sum of the parts. I heard this schmooze again. I'm into sports now. I got corrupted by the American culture after 2 weeks. But a couple of years ago, the Yankees won a World Series. Yeah? Yeah. And I remember after they won the World Series, the 27th? Yeah? 28th? 26th? 26th? Whatever it was. A lot. Someone told me a great vart. A great vart. There's a lot of teams on their uniform that have the name of the player on the uniform. It's only one name on a Yankee uniform. You can go to Modell's, you can buy Jeter jerseys, but on the uniform itself, there's only one name on that uniform, and that is New York. That's the team name. The Yachid, yeah, Yachidim comprise the team, but the message that uniform sends is that it's about the team. And the Yachid has to subjugate himself to the team because that's what's going to make it so much better. And really, at the end of the day, that's what I see this yeshiva is all about. It's about a chevra, and it's about camaraderie, and it's about teamwork, and it's about working together. And we see this all the time in this yeshiva. It's something we work very, very hard at accomplishing. And people like to think that, you know, why do we do intramural basketball? Why do we have this in the afternoon? And why do Rebbes play in these games? Like, what, is that what a Rebbe should be doing? Is that really... And the answer is, you could argue. Maybe Rebbe shouldn't play. Maybe he should be on a different status, and a higher status. Some Rebbe didn't play. Some choose not to. It's up to them. But what's the pshat? And why do we... So the answer is because it builds chevra. It builds teamwork. It builds yeshiva as a bonded unit. We went bowling the other night. And yeah, there was some competition in the bowling. Shir versus shir. But it was a tremendous sense of gratification that I saw. When I saw more talented bowlers helping less talented bowlers. And everyone getting excited for their colleagues when there was a strike. Everyone being happy with someone else's achievements. Everyone sharing together. That's what a yeshiva is. That's what a team is. And that's really what a team is all about. That's really what's going to make things go. The world is full with self-centered people, with selfish people, with people focused on the I and the me. That's the reality. And the truth is, when you're exposed to such people, you all have been, and they're all over. Every single you take 50 people, 70 people, 100 people, any group, you'll see people in that group that are selfish, that are self-centered, that are focused on themselves. And very, very often, other members of the group, they don't always like it. They don't like those guys or those people because of their arrogance, because of their haughtiness. And it's, they ask the question, what bothers? Why does that bother people? Okay, they have a bad midah. They might have other bad, you know, if a guy's cheap, that doesn't bother me. Hey, he's cheap, he has that issue. If a guy has a temper, as long as he doesn't get angry at me, it doesn't really bother me. The thing he's got that meat he's got to work on. But gaiva, arrogance, haughtiness, very often has an impact in bothering others. When people are self-absorbed, it bothers others. And I believe the reason for that is because at the end of the day, people understand that in any venue of your life, whether it's your family, which is a small tzibur, or whether it's your yeshiva, which is a bigger tzibur, whether it's your Israel basketball team, which is a tzibur, whatever, your life is full of us operating where we meet people. We operate together. And when a person is a baal gaiva, is haughty, is absorbed with himself, cares more about the I, the me, than the klal. So basically, he's undermining that building block, that ingredient that is so critical to winning. And once it becomes me and it's a bunch of yechidim, so good, he might get what he wants, he might get what he wants, but at the end of the day, that family, that basketball team, that yeshiva can't be a winner. Now, I just want to touch on, for the past 30 years in the United States, probably the entire West, been a big, big push. Educationally, there's two magic words that every educator is like been drummed in. The psychologists have drummed in two magic words into every educator's brain the past 30 years. And what, of course, are those two magic words?
Self-esteem.
That's right. Self-esteem. You gotta build a guy up. You gotta self-esteem. Self-esteem. We're pushing self-esteem. Now, I got no problem with self-esteem. It's all good. But the line, and this is what you gotta be careful of, build people up. Give them self-esteem. Make them understand how special they are, how valuable they are, how much real worth they have. Understand that so well. But also be careful that it doesn't trip over the line and then produce haughtiness, gaiva, and an unhealthy kind of self-centeredness. It's a fine line. Self-esteem is a very important thing. Knowing what you are and your worth is very important. And I'll even share with you a story from Rabbi Yecheskel Abramsky. Has anyone ever heard of Rabbi Abramsky? Rabbi Yecheskel Abramsky, the Steinertz. He was the head of the London Beis Din, the Gadol Hador. He wrote a Perush on the Tosefta, which is the work. Tremendous, tremendous Gadol Hador. He was the head of the London Beis Din, and there was a shochek in London that the Beis Din fired. And the shochet took the Beis Din to civil court. Took him to court. Fired me, take you to court. And Rabbi Yecheskel Abramsky was put on the stand as a witness or attacked to testify. And the judge asked the question, "Are you the leading Torah scholar in the world?" You know what he said? "Yes, I am." And the judge said, "Is it not the case that there's a Jewish value of humility?" And he answered, "Judge, I'm under oath." Tell the truth. That was the truth. In other words, you got to know who you are. And it's important to know who you are. And there's no contradiction between being part of a team and knowing who you are. It is, however, when you know who you are and you try to be something you're not or greater than you are and so forth, that you get into the world of gaiva. But to know who you are and know your capacity and know your tzelem Elokim and know your value, know your traits, your midos, and what you can accomplish, that's critical. But to operate as part of a tzibur, as part of that team, is when that team can go so, so far. Now, sometimes wealthy people have this problem. Is a wealth translates for many people. Sometimes I hear the stories of a guy who's a regular guy, regular middle class fellow, and he came into a lot of money. And all of a sudden, he moved to a new neighborhood, and his old friends, those other middle class folks, I'm part of the upper class now, I'm in the aristocracy, and all of a sudden, my old friends, I'm beyond that now, I'm a different class now, and he kind of shirks them. The same person. So he got a lot of money, big deal, he's the same person. There, that's Gaiva. And Rabbi Yechiel, Michal, Zeleshov, one of the Rebbes, he had a chassid. This exact thing happened to him. Chassid came into money, and all of a sudden his old hangout, his old people, were no longer his friends. He moved up a station. And he came to the Rebbe, and the Rebbe brought him to a window. And he showed him the window. He said, "What do you see outside the window?" He looked outside the window. "I see normal people going about their daily affairs." And then he said, showed him a mirror. And he said, "What do you see in the mirror?" And he said, "I see myself." He said, "Well, you know what the difference is between the mirror and the window? The difference is a plate of silver. Some silver coating on that piece of glass. You add some silver, you add money to people's pockets, and all of a sudden, they're no longer looking at other people, they're looking at themselves." The person has to be sensitive. Whatever Hashem gave them a gift, maybe it's money, maybe it's a certain type of personality, maybe it's good looks, maybe it's athletic ability, but know that you're part of something very, very big. And I became a grandfather for the second time this week. And it's a very special, special thing. People, whatever they say about grandparents, becoming a grandparent, you know that line they say, everyone says? It's much better than being a parent, because you can give them back. You don't have to, you can send them back, you can send them home. It's true. It's a very geschmack thing. You know, you can play with them, enjoy them, and then, here, you educate them. You pay their, you diaper them. You deal with that. It's all true. It's really true. I'll tell you the emotion I felt, though, this week. You hit a certain age. And it's amazing. I still don't consider myself old, but I look at the rabbeim and the yeshiva, and like, I'm older than them. I'm old. I'm getting there. You know, yeah, you become a Zeta, and you start to... But there's a tremendous sense of like contentment when you hit a certain stage and you look at your children. And then they produce children. And you have a feeling that, you know something? There's something bigger than me. It's not about me. It's about taking something really, really special, really, really important, and giving it to others, transmitting it to others, sharing it with others, so that hopefully they can take that thing and give it to their kids. And being part of this big thing called Klal Yisrael, and this tremendous Mesorah, this tremendous people, of Bali Chesed, of Midos, of what it really means to be a Yid, and transmitting that to your mishpacha, it's a phenomenal thing. And that's really what I believe this yeshiva is all about. I'm in the mode of like, what's the yeshiva all about? Because I just went recruiting. And it is about this concept of family. We had a parent, I spoke to a parent who had a son in the yeshiva a couple of years ago, when the yeshiva was much smaller. And he asked me, like, what are some of the differences? I said, well, we're much bigger now. Back when your first son was in yeshiva, there were 36, 37 Shana Aleph guys. Now we have 70 Shana Aleph guys, much bigger. He goes, and his response, which I like very much, goes, yeah, you went from small family to big family. But the concept is the same, part of something that's bigger. And we see that in this yeshiva on the basketball courts. And we see it in the bowling alleys, the friendship, the brotherhood. We see it in the Beis Medrash. We see it amongst the guys. We see it with the Rabbeim. We see it on the Rebbe level. The Rabbeim enjoy each other's company. We see Rabbeim and Talmidim very much a comfortable family type of feel. And that means, again, you're part of something that's you, but it's more than you. It's beyond you. It's bigger than you. The highlight of my trip in the States, by far, was my one Shabbos there. I spent Shabbos in Cornell University. I'll tell you the truth. 4.5 hour drive back and forth. And I had an 8 a.m. flight Sunday morning to Pittsburgh, and I was absolutely exhausted. But you know what? I just had the opportunity. I wanted to check out college scene. I was interested in that. And we had an opportunity to do something unique and special. We have one Talmud in Cornell. One. And what we did here, rented a van, a 15-seater van. We loaded the van, 14 guys, alumni, and we all made the trek up to Cornell. And we had a Shabbaton, our Cornell Shabbaton. For one time in Cornell, brought 15 guys up and had a very, very special Shabbos in Cornell. And to me, that's what it's all about. Is about being part of something bigger, part of something special, part of a family. That's not just a family this year, but it's part of a family, hopefully for life. Involved in something that's not just me, what I can get out of it, what's good for me, what I want. That's important. That's valuable. That's critical. But the godless, in my opinion, of the Jeremy Lin story is all of a sudden a supposed team of a couple of yechidim, star players. You brought in some no-names and a person who could bring it together, who could create a tzibur feel, and all of a sudden no one cares. No one's interested in the yechidim anymore. No one cares about this guy's status or that guy's status. What matters is how the tzibur is doing. That's a tremendous, tremendous yesod. One that I say, I'm not doing much Torah. There's not much Torah in this discussion. But I think the emes of a concept, a Jewish concept, a Yiddish concept, and you want 1 minute of Torah to be Yotzei. Last week was Parsha Shkolim. And we're in this process from Shkolim to Purim and to Pesach. And these are the months, the Chodshei HaGeula, where Klal Yisrael is anticipating Geula. The Geula of Purim and the Geula of Pesach. And we're hearing stories of Ikvis of the Mashiach and maybe even ultimate Geulas. The key to Geula is everyone's machtis ha-shekel, that's how it starts. Everyone giving their part. Being part of those karbonos ha-tzibur. That's the parash of Shkolim that gets it all started. Rosh Chodesh Adar. Mishenichnas Adar Mar Besimcha. He hit the climax of Purim. But notice those mitzvahs. Matanos Le'evyonin. Let's not ignore the Aniyim. Mishloach Manos Ish L'Reyeu. A Sudas Purim that's everyone together. Participating, enjoying with each other. Part of its Sibu. You want to know Geula. Even when it comes to Divrei Torah. The Gemara Megillah tells us, HaOmer Davar B'Shem Omro, you have a Dvar Torah, you say it in the name of the person you heard it from. Because when you don't do that, you say it in your name, it's my Torah. All of a sudden, that Shtickle Torah is about me, and it's not about us. You say it over in the name of the person you heard it from, it's about us. It's about Klal Yisrael. That's how you bring Geula. By bonding together, by focusing, channeling your tremendous kolchos in that friendship, in that chesed, in that tzedakah, in the shkolim, in the matanos le'evyonim, in helping those in need, in doing those mitzvahs, bonding, always the case is, always, is that the whole is always going to be so much greater than the sum of its parts. And when you go, for example, to Shabbos in Hebron, so now this yeshiva starts to bond, not just with each other, with the Rabbeim, with Avram, with Yitzchak, with Yaakov, with the Imos HaKadoshos, with the Avos HaKadoshim, and you're bonding to something so much bigger than yourself. That's what winners are made of. I wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos.